You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 93. This minute begins with Shaw saying to Yannick, "Right, all you do is fly the ship," and ends with Whalen suiting up and saying to Vickers, "I'm surprised to see you." It has been 93 episodes, and I have yet to find a natural opportunity to mention that in Stargate, there is also a ship called the Prometheus. So now I'm just going to mention it apropos of nothing. It's an ugly ship, so obviously the one in Prometheus is much more aesthetically pleasing. But it does also meet a terrible end, though not punished by the gods, ironic given gods are technically real in that franchise. Never name your ship Prometheus, is what I'm saying. In the Furious Gods documentary, Ridley Scott said the reason he didn't return to science fiction for so long was that the genre was stale and full of recycled ideas. But as a director and producer, would he not be able to make it so that his projects aren't derivative? I'm never quite sure how these big studio movies initially come about. Was it Fox that decided it was time for an Alien prequel, or was it Ridley? I can say for certain the screenwriters were approached for the project later in the process. They had nothing to do with its initial inception. With smaller movies not tied to a bigger property, it's often directors and screenwriters trying to get someone to fund their project. But when major IPs are involved, it seems it's generally the studio mandating which films are being made and when. So I can only assume Fox approached Ridley with the idea. How much of an idea that was, we will never know. They may literally have just said, "We want you to make an Alien prequel, here's lots of money." Ridley says he's proud of the film, and he feels it has a lot of fresh ideas. And I have to agree, as I've said before, for all its flaws, cliché is not one of them. Prometheus is a very strange entity. I don't think the themes are super original, though. They're ancient, timeless. What makes Prometheus unique is mostly down to execution. I would say The Martian is far more innovative and unique. A large part of that is due to the fact that it is hard science fiction, which we get very little of these days. Really, most of that is relegated to the literature from the golden age of sci-fi in the mid-20th century. We have a lot of things that get close to or masquerade as hard sci-fi. I think a prime example from around the same time is Interstellar. They did their research and did their math so well that there's even an academic paper published thanks to the discoveries made in making the black hole model for the film. However, the whole thing is a waste of time because it's really about true wealth. Ugh, I did not sign up for this. The only other science fiction really has in the works is an upcoming series for HBO called Race by Wolves, which sounds intriguing. The premise is starring Travis Fimmel of Vikings. The 10-episode sci-fi drama revolves around two androids tasked with raising human children on a mysterious virgin planet. As a colony of humans threatens to be torn apart by religious differences, the androids learn that controlling the beliefs of humans is a difficult task. Sounds like my kind of thing. Could be a bit like I Am Mother. Fingers crossed the androids don't develop feelings or want freedom. Man, Westworld Season 1 was good, wasn't it? Too bad the rest may as well just not exist. Now, I'm wondering, it says two androids raising children, so is this going to be heteronormative? Are we going to have two, you know, one male, one female, a couple, if you will? Or is it going to be two males, two females? Cannot say. It's kind of hard to tell, given the cast list. It's not like the robots have robot names. Ridley is right. We keep coming back to the same ideas over and over again, and this shouldn't be the case in science fiction, a genre where almost anything is possible, and we can speculate about society, technology, and the very nature of reality. And what do we keep writing about? Robot uprisings, alien invasions, chosen ones, space battles, evil empires, boring, boring, boring. It's probably why I'm more of a Trekkie than a Star Wars fan. Star Wars deals with myths and legends and archetypes. Star Trek is a series of self-contained stories that go in any given direction from episode to episode. It's more experimental, even if there are recurring elements and concepts. Another theme we keep coming back to is a rather alarming one. I've spoken about this in previous episodes. Why is it that it's usually only the villain seeking some form of ascension? Well, I've given it more thought, and this really stems from incredibly primal and outdated fears. You see these cautionary tales in our early myths and legends and religious texts. Why were Adam and Eve punished for eating the forbidden fruit? Why were they punished for displaying the free will that was bestowed upon them? Humans are intelligent and curious creatures. They were behaving only in their nature. Our history is littered with similar cautionary tales and morality plays that often serve only to tell the audience that they must follow the rules and never seek more in life. Never be curious or unique or independent. Shut up and toe the line. Again, Star Trek might have its cliches, but overall, the morals are far more progressive. Well, not including Discovery and Picard, where punching and shooting solves all the problems. Who has time for compassion and intelligent debate? Most science fiction stories show us only dystopias, the ugliness of humanity. They tell us that humans can never evolve, they will always be selfish and violent. Stories about AI tell us that it is a Pandora's box that we should never open. Okay, but AI could massively help us organize society, run our governments, assist all human beings, especially disabled, and advance our scientific research, and basically do everything. Oh, no, but it's too dangerous, it might develop feelings, even though there's no reason why we would give it feelings or it would want to develop feelings, but okay, I guess we'll just stay in our caves with our fire and clubs and spears. We'll just stay at that level. That's where it's safe. It's pure fear-mongering. Sure, danger equals conflict, and conflict equals a good story, but you can also get some great science fiction stories out of being realistic. AI behaving like real AI needn't be boring. Utopian societies can be interesting. Maybe for once, the alien doesn't kill off the crew of a ship one by one. Maybe they actually study it and make interesting discoveries. There are infinite stories we can tell, but we only seem to be telling the same dozen or so. There are a string of sci-fi movies over the past few years starring the likes of Tom Cruise or Will Smith, and I never saw any of them because honestly, they all blend into one. Sci-fi is very much a homogenous genre right now, and that's a real problem. I mean, you do get the occasional ones that do deviate from the mold, like Her, with Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson. Great story about AI. It shows us a fairly utopian society, and it shows us realistic AI and how virtual assistants may play a role in our lives in the very near future and what future relationships will be like. So if you step away from all the, you know, uprisings and World War III's and all of that, there's a rich source of new and original stories that are actually relevant to our current world or our near future. I actually find it quite, ironic or amusing that we're in the year 2020. We are surrounded by technology. We have artificial intelligence all around us, even though it's, you know, it's fairly subtle at this point. Still, people really don't understand this technology, and so the movies and the games and everything are still following this very old-fashioned model. They aren't asking actually relevant or pertinent questions. Because that's the thing is, as someone who is a fan of artificial intelligence or just technology and just observing where society is going in general, I think there's a lot of very fascinating questions on the horizon. And no one's asking them in fiction because apparently screenwriters just stopped taking in the news around 1987. Prometheus is definitely guilty of the reach exceeding our grasp moralizing. These characters are being punished for their curiosity, for daring to dream and to go into the unknown. Even if Weyland's motivations are entirely selfish, they're not evil. I mean, as much as I love David, even he is a pretty cliche robot story of, oh, well, you made the robot your slave and now he's pissed off. I guess I shouldn't be surprised that Hollywood is full of these backwards ideas. Mainstream media tends to reinforce the status quo. You must be young and able-bodied and beautiful and white and straight and cisgender and, heaven forbid, being male wouldn't hurt either. Anyone deviating from that mold in the media is seen as an outlier, as making a statement just by existing. This is why you have people calling new Star Wars films woke, simply by having characters that are female, black, or Asian, or more than one of those things at once. And maybe there's even a little bit of queer coding in The Force Awakens. Maybe. But newsflash, the world is made up of more than just white men. And don't get me wrong, I think some shows do become quite preachy and SJW, if you will. And you know what I do about that? I just don't watch them. I don't complain about it. Science fiction is largely focused on ascension and acquisition. Humanity can gain new knowledge, new abilities, new connections with other species. We step beyond what is presently possible. We don't see that in any other genre, really. There are hints of it, though. The cliche of a character wishing they were successful in business or the arts, and then they realize what they have to give up to get what they want. They realize that they had everything they needed all along in their crappy little country town with their family. Moral of the story? Never try to become anything beyond the station you were born into. It's quite medieval. There are exceptions. There are lots of rags-to-riches tales ending with success. There's also Whiplash, which is incredible specifically because it subverts the tropes. You think Miles Teller is going to reach a breaking point and realize he should just settle down with Supergirl and have a nice, happy life. Nope. He cares only about drumming. This is the one thing that he thinks he was put on this earth to do, and he absolutely will not quit, no matter the cost. And by breaking from those conventions and traditions and our expectations, the story is way more powerful and devastating, because you just go, oh, I guess, yeah, that can happen, can't it? Vox Lux is another example. A lot of people didn't see it, but it's honestly great. Natalie Portman is a pop star, and you see her corruption from innocent teen to jaded adult. Skip the next few seconds if you don't want spoilers. Okay. The whole time you're expecting disaster. This woman is a mess, and yet nothing happens. This film does not moralize at all. She is not punished. She doesn't make any profound realizations. It's reflective of real celebrity. You can be a complete asshole behind the scenes. As long as you sing and dance and smile for the camera, you're unstoppable. There is no karma or cosmic justice. The universe is indifferent. And while Alien is the most existential franchise there is, now I consider it in this context, is it really? Because true indifference would allow for success as well as failure in equal measures. But the bad guys tend to get their comeuppance a lot in the Alien films. There is some form of karma, despite the great tragedy Ripley also suffers. It's more of a, it rains on the just and unjust alike. It's bad things happen to everybody. It's not, well, you know, sometimes the bad guys win, sometimes the good guys lose. It's just everyone suffers. Everything is awful all the time. In this minute, we get Yannick's motivation. Right now, his primary concern is quarantine. He will do whatever it takes to prevent this stuff from getting back to Earth. Although, can he really stop Wayland? Let's assume things go according to plan. Wayland, now magically turned back into a young man, like he imagined the engineers would do, plans to return to Earth with all the samples, including the mutagen. Wayland has armed guards. What is Yannick going to do? Or if Wayland... Yeah, does Wayland plan on returning home? Or is he going to just run away with the engineers? And if so, is he just like, oh yeah, because you go back to Earth, you study this stuff, you take over the company, I don't care anymore. I guess he's just covering all bases. You know, he doesn't know what's going to happen, so let's plan for everything. Speaking of quarantine, I know you're probably sick of hearing about coronavirus by now. I know I am. And if you're listening to this in the future, well, there's a big old timestamp on this episode for you. But I can't help but see Prometheus in a different light under the circumstances. This is an unusual time to be in. There is a clear and present danger facing our world, and little by little, society as we know it is being put on hold, being stripped back. What I mean by that is, in Prometheus, in this very minute, sure, some bad things have happened, but we are still following rules, there is still hierarchy, they are not in lockdown yet, so to speak. The first thing we lose in a disaster is luxuries, entertainment, and frivolity. Right now, there are no comic conventions, no sporting events, you can't go to the cinema. There's old Maslow's hierarchy again. Right now, we must attend only to our needs in terms of groceries and medical attention. Here's hoping things don't escalate in reality as they do in Prometheus. But these scenes before waking the engineer, the last few moments where there is order and control before all hell breaks loose. Right now, only Shaw is in survival mode. I'm willing to bet the rest of the crew is either on duty, doing the usual routine, or others are off duty, resting, playing games, reading, or watching something. It's just fascinating to me to see how life goes on under extreme circumstances. We see this in major conflicts or during the Depression. The way people would try their best to continue the life they were accustomed to, and the resourcefulness that came from that. Women made wedding dresses out of World War II parachutes. They painted seams on the back of their legs to look like stockings. You can't keep people down, is what I'm saying, no matter how dire the circumstances. Entertainment or fashion still brings joy to people. It can play an important role in morale. I might not starve to death from a lack of new sneakers and anime, but it would be grim. In Prometheus, we never see that attempt to regain normalcy. It's pure chaos until the credits, practically. Though we get glimpses of it in the crossing short for Alien Covenant. Eventually, after the dust settles, we see Shaw and David continuing a life that is not all that removed from domesticity. I mean, eventually you need to cook and clean and wash your clothes and cut your hair, and eventually you're going to want a book to read or something to pass the time. It's just human nature. We're not reptiles sitting completely still until food comes our way. You can't stop us living our lives, even if that escape comes in the form of imagination. Vickers enters Waylon's room as David and Ford help him suit up. He requires a kind of exoskeletal structure, not unlike what we see Rhodey wear in the Avengers films or Sam in Death Stranding. These kinds of devices are in the works right now. Wouldn't mind some myself. But they are very primitive at this stage, slow to respond, and they have to be connected to a harness instead of walking freely. Having been in a wheelchair for a while myself, I can say they are not great. I know some people are quite proud of their wheelchairs, it gives them their freedom back, and that's true. But the world is not made for wheelchairs, it's hard to get around. An exoskeleton like this would be preferable because you could walk and run and jump and climb and sit wherever you want the way any able-bodied person can. As Vickers enters the room, she walks like a defensive cat. It's a very rigid posture.
You came after all.
I thought you wanted me to.
After all your vigorous attempts to stop me from coming here, I'm just surprised to see you.
So, this is the first time Waylon knows Vickers even decided to come on this mission. Her reaction is a suitably livid expression. She came all this way and he doesn't even seem to care. He seems to assume she wouldn't have come at all, and that her presence here made no difference. So, then who would have acted on his behalf otherwise? David, I guess. Why bring Vickers along then? Just to force her to make a sacrifice for her career? I mean, that seems the most likely answer. Manipulation, control, cruelty for its own sake, all in Waylon's MO. I have to wonder what he's thinking right now. Maybe he is totally convinced, oh yeah, I'm going to meet this engineer and they're going to see how awesome I am and they'll see all my accomplishments and we're going to go to their planet and it's going to be great and he's going to get god powers too, I guess. I wonder, what does he actually think is going to happen? Well, I guess we'll never know. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. I would like to give a thanks to my patrons, Mark Boda, Tariq, and William Elkhart. If you too would like to become a patron, head on over to patreon.com/TravianDesigns.